Band 4, Rut Dennison, Dammatak, tar på Ljusbacken, kväll på söndag, 81.
Well, time has come once again to talk a little. Also, I actually talked quite a lot to you today. Also, the morning I guided through your body and gave instructions how to keep attention to the sensations of our body and where. Remember, it was this morning, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Were you here, Peter? No.
No, I was not.
Yeah, you weren't. We do it, I think, tomorrow again, yeah? So it's always good to have it a second time. It's quite overwhelming the first time. And I'm sure we all lost here and then ourselves, didn't we? Mm. Yes, Vinila, didn't you?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, we all did. It's quite difficult to hold attention that long. So, usually, yeah, and then in the afternoon I was also talking. Remember, we had quite a wonderful talk all together, at least I did with you, but I don't feel I talk in that way, because when I see your faces and when I feel you before me, and when it comes to a specific thing we shall do or attend, then I communicate to you directly. So that was happening this afternoon with respect to our walking, remember? Johann, do you remember what we said? One sentence?
Well, we were talking, I was asking if there was any special way.
Yes, right.
Then we were talking about this lifting forward, mm-hmm. say,
yes.
versus the continuous movement.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember more, Karin?
It was main thing was to have attention, whatever you were doing,
yes.
and not how it was supposed to be done, but to keep attention.
And out of the attention, it will come as it is supposed to be. It's a different process, you see. It's the other way around. We always want the rule first. And then we want to go accordingly. here, this is, we're getting into a different process where we first listen and look and begin to understand and be attentive, and then without a rule, the only rule is actually just being calm and attentive, and then you get the rules. Without rules, you will know how to do it and what to do. So it's quite different. Why it is so, it is coming then out of a very deep ground in us, very deep. And that is then right. That is the very harmonious thing. We know how to walk, even good to walk. We don't need a rule on above or before walking, when attention is there, and that goes to other things too, to our own life. So we find then our highest ruler, rule giver, within ourselves. It's just not so easy to come to that. We have to make some effort. And we have to have a very open mind for that. And a willingness too to do that, for it is not easy in the beginning. So we could also call this process of attending to myself the process of coming to understand myself, or the process of coming to self-knowledge. One can also say it with a shorter or with a verb, coming to know this process I am, or who I am. Usually I ask questions such as, why did you come here? What was the motive which brought you? This time I did not. I could do it now, but you answer it silently. Now, why did you come here? Do you know the motive? Were we clear, or kind of understanding why we came here? Sometimes there are answers like, I came here to know myself. Sometimes people say, I came here to understand myself better. That means a little bit the person already understands. Isn't it a similar motive you had to come here, Eric?
Yes,
a similar motive you have. Uh-huh. Gunilla?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether you have felt that what we are doing is a good way to know yourself, or to come to know yourself. Usually it is too early to say that, even when one goes through the whole course. For some it's difficult to understand that what we are doing is, and I have felt that what we are doing is a good way to know yourself, or to come to know yourself. Usually it is too early to say that, even when one goes through the whole course. For some it's difficult to understand to understand that what we are doing is an answer to this eventually. Who am I? Maybe we haven't asked that question so direct, but maybe we have. Who has? Sometimes said, my God, who am I? You have, Johann.
Yes.
You have. Wonderful. Were you angry at that time or loving to yourself?
Well, I've been asking that question many times.
You are. Mm-hmm. At what point are you asking it sometimes?
Sometimes when I'm angry and sometimes when I'm loving.
Ah, both ways. Good. Yes, it is a very burning question. Who am I? You know, philosophy and religion have always tried to give us answers for this question. Actually, that is the purpose or the function of philosophy, to give us answers to burning questions about our life and existence. And religion too. In many ways, they have been maybe satisfying. In many ways, they have not been. But it was always an attempt, and on the intellectual level or on the practical level, to give us an answer to the question, who am I? Now, in modern time, psychology and psychiatry has entered the field to help us to solve this question. There are lots of encounter groups nowadays and humanistic movements, calling it all kinds of names, primal scream and gestalt therapy, and can you think of it? Rebirthing seminar or sensitivity training, Alexander Method, Wilhelm Reich method, or what else? Feldenkrais method. Have you heard of all these a little bit? All these are movements or attempts to give an answer to this burning question. This question becomes more burning and more urgent than ever before. For now in modern time, through the competition and through the technology and through the modern ways of living, we somehow estranged from our spiritual source of life. And we find ourselves quite isolated and quite alone and quite bewildered. And so the question, who I am, is actually more urgent, because the pain about myself, within myself, is quite intense. The pain of isolation, the pain of loneliness, the pain of frustration, the pain of kind of disturbance and unrest. These are all pains. So now we also are in this attempt, Vipassana meditation, to answer this question. Who am I? And I can tell you from my own experience, from all the systems I know and all the systems I have meant, I have mentioned before, I actually know. But of all the systems, I think, through my own experience, I can say with my whole heart that the way of Vipassana meditation is a very safe way to find out who I am. And it is a very satisfying answer you will get from this way. Vipassana meditation tries to give us a way to find out who I am. It's the most simple way from all ways, I think, that is not meant it is the most easiest way, but it is simple and it is very scientific in that it is a way which is based upon experience and upon an experience which is not outside of myself but which is within myself. Actually, that is the only place where I can experience. Here, with this body and with this mind. So a little bit, I think, we here and then we have actually received answers or little touches of who I am. Remember when we sit, or who I am really, you see, in a way, we actually kind of know who I am. It's a personality I feel I am. I know I have a name, and I have a profession, or I have some hippie work, or I have some other profession, or I am a hitchhiker. I kind of know a few things about myself. But that is on a very superficial level, or on a level above the surface. It is apparently not enough. If it were, we wouldn't come and search for other answers. But whereas we have worked now these 4 days already, we have had experiences, other experiences of what I am. Other than I am usually used to. I use my name, my profession, I know I can drive a car and I can talk to somebody. So we had here already below this phenomenal level touches of who I am. Just think of when we are sitting and observing the feeling, the sensation that is sure a level of experience or some part of me which I never touch or really consciously experience. I hardly pay attention to my breath. I hardly experience myself in this process of breathing on such a quiet, deep level. I maybe know I breathe, but very superficially. Hardly do I pay attention. The same with the body. I only know a little bit or pay attention when something is painfully wrong. But as a rule, we don't do that. So by doing this, we are actually going the same way the Buddha did, and to which the Buddha is asking us or exhorting us to do the same thing, to penetrate, to observe, and to look into this mind and body process, or into this what I call ich, what I call I here, this livingness. And he says, this is the way to find out who you are. And he also says, there is nothing above that anymore. This is the beginning, and that is the continuation of the practice, and that is the end of the practice. Continuously observing and witnessing all what arises in this livingness I call Johann. Well, it is actually very understood. I mean, we have no doubt here that it should be otherwise, perhaps. For think of it, we want to find out who I am, who Johann or Gerd is. Where Johann or Gerd is not on top of the mountain somewhere, or is not in the cellar living. He is right here. And it is the one who wants to find out. Every scientist will take the object which he wants to find out about just before him, and will look at it, and will observe it, and will make notes what he observes, and will do it again and again and again till he has an answer what he is observing. And then he thinks he has found out something very deep about this object. So I want to find out about myself. I must be the object of the observation. That is the scientific way. So we're not doing here any religion or any philosophy. We're actually doing here a scientific way. In a very scientific way, we are proceeding and to find out who I am, with just like a scientist, only with a difference. The scientist takes the object before him. He has one object there, which is not himself. But here, I have the object before me and find out I really don't have it before me, because I am also the object, and I'm also the observer. In other ways, I am the object and the scientist. A very simple method. The scientist has the object outside, and he is the subject who observes that too. He is only one. And I think that's because it is so difficult. Because what we observe and what we look at is me, and with what I look and the tool I use is also me. Comes also from my own self. Somewhere it is here hidden, somewhere where, and it is attention, we call it. very bare attention, very sharp attention, together with concentration, it is. And that is our tool. That is actually the scientist who observes here the rest of it. But the difficulty is that it isn't so obeying us as we want to do it. And it isn't staying constantly. And it isn't so obvious. So we have always to make some special effort to find, very loving effort, just not so harsh one, very loving effort, very tender effort, very open effort we have to make. In order to get this tool out of us in function, to get it going, and to that it can start observing. Don't we have this all experience? Pacha? Mm. Yes, you can really feel what I'm saying. So that's why it is so difficult. It is a scientific process, yet just simple observing, like a scientist does. But because these both things are in me and are me, it is difficult. Because they're not so available. One is not so available. The tool, the observing, faculty of the mind, the attention of the mind. Sure, we have all attention, just sitting here and listening to me, you have attention. Seeing the bird flying by, you have attention. Milking the cow, you have attention. We always have attention, but this is a special type of attention. It has to be steady and very sharp, because the object is very fine at times. It's a sensation and the feelings, and sometimes it is the mind which produces thoughts, also very fine. Sometimes it is a sound, I say, we shall listen. We also observe that. When we eat, I ask you to observe the taste, also very fine. And also because we never have done this kind of activity, of action, it's very difficult to do that. But as I invite you again and again, and help how to do it, gradually we will come to somehow see a little bit more of who I am. Now the Buddha says, at his height of enlightenment, when he really saw what we are, he says, nothing but energy, moving energy in constant flux, never static, never still, always changing. That is what your living process is. And also he says, that's not really you, he found out. But you have first to see also this kind of reality we are. So, nothing but energy. And he says, bodily energies and mental energies. Now he distinguished it and also explained it. For us, a little bit at this point of our development will be a little bit of intellectual, but let us try just to understand a little how this mass of bodily and mental energies is to be understood within ourselves and in this working and interacting. So the physical energies are all those energies which comprise our body. And within that energy you find little particles. This is what energy is. And within a little particle, or a little neutron would be the modern scientist would say that, within an atom or within a neutron, within a little particle, in each particle, there are many characteristics to find. They are collected together. What do you say to that? They're gathered together. But it's not necessary to know them all. But the four primary qualities we should know. Why? Because all substance, not only our flesh substance, this substance, anything, this substance, this hard substance, has the same energy fundamentally. When the scientist would break it down, would melt this and would make it liquid, would put a little liquid stuff under the microscope, he would find out the same thing. Little particles. It is not a solid thing. A little particles are put together and make a mass. And in each of those particles you find four major characteristics. And it is these characteristics which are within our little particles which we are experiencing. Not the body. You cannot experience a body. You will see why in a minute. You just experience the quality of the particles. What are the qualities? These primary qualities of which the entire universe is made of. That is the element of hardness, or in the traditional language of earth. Element of earth or hardness. That means also softness. When it is hard, it can also be soft. When you are melting this down, it is soft. Then there is the element of air or movement. Then is the element of cohesion or water. That is that which holds it all together. You bake bread and you have flour. Without the water, you couldn't bake the bread. You have to have an element which puts it together, makes the cohesion, the connection. And you have a lot of that in your body too. And then the fourth element is that of heat or temperature. Heat, the element of fire. So these four major elements you can find are to find in each particle, in each atom, out of which all matter is comprised of. There are many other characteristics in one little element, in one little particle. Modern physics has found many more even than the Buddha is mentioning. But the major elements to know is enough, and it shows that the Buddha was quite a scientist without a great laboratory. He found that out through observing and experiencing himself. If you ask me some other about some other characteristics within, which are contained in those little elements. A few maybe would be interesting for you to know. One would be the element of femininity. The other would be the element of masculinity. The another one would be the element of growth, of growing. Another one would be the aspect of decay, of dying out, of weakening. Other one would be color or taste. But the four ones, the four primary elements to note are those which we can experience. You see, when I sit, for example, and experience pain, or hard sensation, or a pulling sensation, that is the element of hardness within ourselves. Or I touch, I lean against somewhere, I experience that hardness, or I experience a softness. I experience heat or cold. We experience constantly the element of water too. Just think of your mouth. Notice it, and when you eat, how the water is mixing with our food, which is formed within our mouth. Yes.
Is it possible to experience that, really?
Well, yes. You know when you are cold or not. That is the experience.
Yeah, cold, but the water.
Well, you notice it. Yes, I think so. You do. You notice the water coming into the mouth. You notice when you eliminate. And you notice the water in that, I think, the liquid, by, you see, it has something to do with the burning up process. The blood vessels get filled and the blood is streaming along. You notice that. To some extent, you do. And that belongs to the part of the physical energies. More belongs to that. All.
I have a question. Do you mean that these characteristics actually are in the matter?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can experience them. Because you have mental faculties which can experience that. We come to the capacity of the mental energy in a minute. Hmm? I don't mean it, it is so. You can experience heat, you can experience hardness. We have various other names for these basic experiences, but that is what you experience. You sure cannot experience Johann. You see? Well, just wait a minute. I don't want to go further. Just a second. So, our physical energy belongs our body, and this is the body is comprised of all these particles and little parts in which these basic primary, or these basic elements are elements. Characteristics are coming together. Also, of course, belong all our sense bases, all our sense organs to our physical energies. Of course, they too have as their basic material these characteristics, these little particles. And you see, that is actually not so very strange, because this modern physics does have also found out that there is no solid matter, that there is nothing static, that there all matter is comprised of particles, of little parts, of atoms or neutrons or whatever name they give. And so we too. Then there are the mental energies. And the mental energies, for better understanding, he divided into four different abilities or different capacities. There is the capacity of feeling first. In the Pali language, it is called the skanda. So the first one, we talked about the bodily energies or the body skanda, or a regard one can call. So the skanda of feeling. Well, that don't we experience already a little bit? That capacity of the mind, of the mental energies. Right now you can see where you feel. Now, feeling is actually sixfold. It's not just that the body itself feels, but all the sense organs we have also have the capacity to have a sensation, to produce a sensation. The eye, when it looks at the flame, that moment, there is some vibration going on in that process. Whilst the eye sensitivity gets the contact with the object, and there is a feeling. Then there is a feeling produced, an ability of feeling connected to the sense organ, ear, when it hears the sound. And so it is when the tongue is connecting with the object of taste, then there is also a feeling, a capacity of feeling. And so with the smell, or a sense organ knows in respect to smell. And there is also when the faculty or the sense base of mind, which is producing thoughts and ideas and thinking, we also say, I feel, I am sad, I feel. Though this is also producing a sensitivity of feeling. Feeling is produced, or is an ability, which is in all six sense organs we have. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, the entire body, feeling, and the mind, which produces thoughts. We never think in this way, because we also don't experience right so on that fine level, or our mind isn't that sharp that we can pick up that sensitivity of feeling when the eye hits the object. However, with our body, we do pick it up. Somehow, the sense organ body, all the sense, all the tissues which can sense and have the capacity to sense, there are so many all over, not restricted to a little place. So there it is very easy for us to pick up the capacity of feeling. Then there is, so that is a skanda of feeling. That is one capacity of the big mass mind, hold it, of the big mass mind. Yeah.
So Do you mean that those cells in the body do pick up the feeling I get through seeing?
No, I didn't say that. No, feeling in the...
they just pick up
their
senses.
Yeah,
they don't pick up any other senses.
No, no. There's a feeling to each sense organ. And the body is a sense organ.
Yes.
And that is tactile sensitivity, feeling, yeah. So, then there is a second skanda within that big mass of mental energy, and that is the far away from feeling. It's just actually the next process of feeling till it becomes conscious is the capacity of perception. Now, without the feeling we couldn't perceive. That is a little bit clearer, a little bit wider. It's already in the process of more becoming. Perceiving is the capacity which can recognize. I perceive and I recognize now. Once more, what you recognize, it can store away. Like you are storing away your sewing threads and needles in a drawer. And if you have a sewing shop, you have many threads and many needles and many different types in different drawers. Everything stored away. And when you need one, you go and pull it out and here you have it. In the same way, the capacity of perceiving can register and can store it away. And then when we need it, we go and get it back. We don't know we do it. We pull a drawer and get it, and we call it memory. See? Ah, yes, here it is. Or it goes faster. It's not so like pulling a drawer, it's right there. And we constantly perceive. Right now you are perceiving. You're perceiving the sound, you're perceiving with your eyes, you see? You are perceiving maybe a sound, a smell. Has something tremendously to do. Yeah, all right, go quick. Has something to do with so the sense, the tactile sense organ, which is the all over the body, is perceiving feeling. The sense organ, eye, is perceiving this object, but not really the object. When you go really close and be very accurate, it would be only color what you perceive, and it would be only a form. But that comes a little later to understand that. Let's just let it say it's perceiving. In the scriptures, when you read, it's very interesting how they explain it. They say, the Buddha says, Oma, I tell you, the skanda of perceiving is called because it is perceiving. Very simple. Everything what you perceive. Every sense organ can perceive. And the sense organ, mind, that kind of particular part of mind, which can think and make ideas, or wish things, or reject, is perceiving the thought. It's perceiving this process of producing thoughts and ideas and so on. So, don't think about it. It's not this, not so important that you break your that you are attempting to understand. I'd just like to share that with you, just in order to understand a little bit more of this mass I call my livingness, or my aliveness, or my myself. Actually, what it is just physical energy and mental, and we are now trying to analyze the mental part, the mental energies, in the way the Buddha did. I read recently a report about somehow in parapsychology, great brain surgeons and psychiatrists have tried to analyze the mental faculties on the these out of which the mind is consisting, and they have nothing really done except maybe a few things added for clarification, but basically as the Buddha has seen it and analyzed it and talked about it, it is still valid. It is not any modern method is devaluating this basic analysis. So we had now the skanda of feeling and of perception. Both are sixfold and belonging to the single sense organs. Now we come to a very difficult one, but a very active one, skanda, with which we deal every second, and that is a skanda which really makes my life, and which troubles my life, and which also can make my life harmonious. That is the capacity of forming, making mental formations. And what is that? And first, in thoughts. Mental formation is, for example, the capacity of the mind, or the mind forms itself. You must understand, mind as a big mass. Where is it? It's everywhere in you, as a big mass, and there forms itself some kind of vibration, and which makes itself as a ability or capacity, and we call it then concentration. And then suddenly you can concentrate. Then there is the mental formation, which we may call attention. Also, out of this big mass, it forms itself, and it vibrates in 17 impulses always. And it vibrates, and it becomes then attention. And before you know, it vibrates off and it's gone. Now concentration now can function in such a way that it helps attention, and when they both are together, then they can stay longer. Otherwise they would get lost again in the big mass of mind, of mind energy. Another mental formation is hate. It forms itself, and who hasn't noticed that process of forming? Don't you know? We feel it in the stomach actually sometimes. We feel it in our jaws. Even the face runs red sometimes. Entire change in our bodily energy of this mental formation called hate. Anger, the same. The mental jealousy is a mental formation. But you see, I call it, we say mental formation, but at the same time, what is jealousy? It is a capacity of the mind. I am jealous. And it has such a power that you can take this and exercise that. It has that kind of power to form itself into other forms. Haven't you read great stories about jealousy, or where you found a jealous figure, what they all can do? You need to read a story. You only need to pick up the newspaper. You also know it yourself. Who has experienced the mental formation jealousy? Honest, all hands. Good. Very strange stuff. Not good stuff, but strange stuff. And it can have tremendous trailing or tremendous what would you say, waves. Another mental formation is love. You see, different. It's a different type. Or compassion. Or desire, extreme desire. That is better than desire, greed is another mental formation, the capacity which wants, which desires. Which is actually attaching, has a quality of attaching. Then another mental formation is the capacity of being light and elastic in the mind, openness of mind, trust of mind, elasticity of the mind. These are all mental formations or mental capacities, and these are the things which create, which when they are vibrating in us and forming themselves, they are ready to what to do? To act. They compel us to act through word and through deed, and this is the domain in which we are creating karma. This capacity of the mind, not the feeling and not the perception, but the karma, but the mental formation. Because you see, feeling, it just vibrates and you feel in the eyes, and you notice and through the ear, you notice in your body feeling, and you perceive too. But it stays there. The feeling become interpreted, and what the feeling feel only can be acted out by the mental formation. And the mental formations are the forerunner of all the deeds in word and, well, in deeds. That's very interesting to know. This is the domain, but that's still not enough. Still, we wouldn't be a real human being with these three skandhas, with these three mental aspects. There's a very important one now. The fourth one, the crown of all, is that what we may call consciousness. And that is a capacity which now lets us know. It's conscious. It realizes somehow it can hold the object. The attention is the mental formation and the concentration. But if there would be no consciousness with it, we still wouldn't know that we are tending, you see? So, all these four groups, existence group, or aggregate you may call it, but Skanda is a real traditional name, the Buddha's name, the Pali language. Skanda. These four are comprising that whole mass of mental energy. Now we can break it down on other levels and in other ways, but that is for another time. The mentality, what we call the mental energies, can be seen and analyzed and broken down in different ways according to the because we're experiencing in different ways. So, but here in this way, to make one point more. Remember, I talk about this as a kind of an answer to the question, who am I? So now we found out one answer, kind of, little with our experience and a little bit through our intellectual understanding now. And you don't need to believe it, you can throw it away. But you can also stay open and see, some things I already experienced. And what you can experience, that is truthful. Direct is not built on any idea or on any belief here. No one says you are that and that and that and believe it now. No. You are only invited now to kind of experience more of this process. Physical energy and mental energy. Now, the consciousness, the last aggregate, or the last skanda, I should say, is also sixfold, naturally, because it is connecting to each functioning of the sense organ. The eye has some vibration of gets in contact with this object. It vibrates, we don't notice it yet, we don't even, but takes place, then it perceives that flame, that light, and then you can now, if the moment you perceive, there can also come a mental formation, like you give a name now to it. You notice that you would like to grasp it or pick it up. Or the mental formation attention would come and you would just attend to it. And now comes the mental formation, the skanda, or the capacity of knowing, consciousness, and then you really are in contact with this. Then you have visible consciousness. When the ear does that in contact with the tone, with the sound, you have then audible, is it right, audible? Audible consciousness, or hearing consciousness. You same with when the taste takes place and you really notice it. There is the attention, there is the sensation, the feeling, and the perception and consciousness. And then takes place taste consciousness. And then the sense, the organ, tongue, is really experiencing purely itself in taste. And then the ear is the same, purely experiencing the tone, the sound. In the same way, the thought, the thought is thinking, obvious having idea, or the thought is thinking, you know it is happening. Then there is the thinking, mental consciousness is taking place, or is forming itself. So consciousness is a very important skanda, capacity of the mind, but so is the mental formation capacity, the capacity to form these characteristics, these capacities, attention, hate, jealousy, love. And so is important the perception, and so is important the feeling. All these four skandhas, very important. And you could not take one out. You can take out one. You couldn't take out the consciousness and say, all right, you just leave this as three. You couldn't take out the feeling. You wouldn't be a human being. You couldn't take out the bodily skanda. You wouldn't have no substance. You would be some kind of invisible energy somewhere. Where? Who knows? This mental energy must have a bodily energy in order to live. So that's what we are, an interdependent process of physical and mental energy. And here, when we are sitting now in our practice, we are beginning to somehow get an insight how it is functioning here. I'm thinking constantly. I'm smelling, I am hearing, I am perceiving, I'm carrying a body around. So I'm getting, I'm breathing also body. So I am beginning through this faculty of the mind, which we found in the mental formation skanda, attention and concentration. With that, we are looking. But we are also looking, actually, that moment with consciousness, perception, and with feeling, and with the bodily energy too. So all what we do is, every minute, we are always having light sent, or having turned ourselves to ourselves, so to speak. You see? We begin to awaken within ourselves. There is no other faculty outside of us who can tell us who we are. Within this, we are finding out. With these capacities, and then when we have seen that, we will be real deep. Then we say, we could ask the question, well, there is perception, there is a feeling, there is mental formation, there is consciousness, and there is body energy. Well, but where is the skanda I call I, or me, or my personality, or Johann? Where is that skanda? How do I call this now me, myself? Actually, what really is there is mental and physical energies. Parts are there. So it's actually an extra thing, this me, on these parts. Let's say we have a card. Let's say a card, here we have cars here. Take the wheels away, put them on this nice big yard, and then put the motor apart and put all the parts on there too. And then take the door away and put it on the floor. Dismantle the whole car and place it upon the floor on this yard. Somebody now coming and saying, "Ha! So many parts! So many parts! You know, when we put this these parts together," he didn't know it, that we dismantled it. "You know, it looks like when we put these parts together, we have a car." You see, the name car can only exist when the parts are together. The car are not the part, are actually the parts. But when it is put together and we go, someone opens the door and you shall have a ride, you will not say, "Now I'm riding on four wheels and one motor and two doors and five windows and an accelerator and a brake." No, you just say a car. But actually the car are many of these parts put together. And the same way we are. This, what I call I, is actually a name for this kind of, for these many skandhas or many parts. So the name me or I is kind of not so important. Just a name, like a big sign on it. But what we do is, we always take the name as very important. I, my. And we never think that I am actually a living process, interdependent in its or in interaction all the time. And in constant motion. The whole thing is energy and constant motion, in functioning with a certain capacities. And that is quite different. It will change quite differently in a radical way our life. Not that it makes everything purple now, or fairy tale like. No, I just have a different attitude. For when I feel myself, I refer to I and me. I know, yes, it's a living process here. There are all these functioning here, these things creating mental formations, and they are the ones which compel me to do things, and that all is very dependent and interacting. It's actually a process of becoming, but not only of becoming. The moment of becoming is also a kind of a change, becomes something else, until it gets some cells renew and get out of existence, and it's a constant change. And at the end, this whole thing actually gives up too. So you see, it's a very interesting thing we are. And to kind of, maybe you can sense and feel that this name I is not really so the absolute truth. It's not the last truth. It is actually a convenient truth only. I really cannot say, "Please, would you allow me to sit my five skandhas on this chair?" You say, "Could I sit down, please?" I. It's quicker. It refers to this. But when you know behind the word I, behind this convenient truth, you know the more real truth of for what it stands and what is there underneath functioning, you are probably sitting down in a different way. You relate different to life. Now I could go and ask you why, but let us just continue practicing, then we may find out a little bit more. I think that much for tonight, except that we could say, I would like to to mention what the Buddha says to his monks when he discovered all this and tells them. He says, O monks, and there is nothing to which we can hold on. There is something in us like a river without interruption flowing, in constant change and in constant motion. And it is not the I which is it, that process. It is the process itself which renews itself, which becomes, and which also destroys itself, and to start somewhere else, maybe again. It is a constant flow, a constant stream, which we can observe in this process, to what I refer, to which I refer as I or my personality. So there is not really an I. There is not really something I can refer to me. And that is, O monks, that we don't understand this right, is the cause of our deep, deep pain, is the cause of our fear, is the cause of our suffering. And to know this much deeper and to understand it and to experience it deeper will make us quiet, will give us the final answer, will put us above this dissatisfying feeling we have when we live and not know. Makes an end of ignorance, he says. And you see, that is why a real Buddhist or someone who goes this way of self discovering who you are really cannot be angry, really seriously, when things are wrong and when things are not so good. Because one begins to understand, we are not something so very solid, we are not something so very we can grasp and hold on to. And in this constant flow of change, of energy, interacting constantly with no one who directs it, there is trouble. And so someone who goes this way begins to think in this term and to accept more and to realize that the living process to which we cannot hold on and which is constant change, there is inevitable some pain and sorrow and not and or ignorance. And that's why the Buddha says to find really deeply out what we are. And when you see this really deeply, that moment you recognize it and you experience yourself as that, that is the moment of great, of bright enlightenment. Then you awake to the great mind, you can see to the God mind, to whatever you may call. But that is the process of coming to self-knowledge. That is actually no other process than living a life in which you are turning and giving energy to yourself. That's all. May we all come to realize this very deeply. May all sentient beings, especially all human beings first, come to see this deeply in themselves. In that way, may they come to begin and finally to end pain, ignorance, yes, I think that is enough for tonight. It was longer than I thought, naturally. It's difficult to talk about these topics, which are quite deep and touching our being in a short way. I mostly cannot do it. Yes, Richard, please.
It is said that in this process, it is only possible to have one at a time. We can only have the eye process.
I did not argue that. Never said you can have two.
No, I won't argue either. But I wonder, what happens to the other ones when they?
Well, they are not there at the moment you see and you realize this is that you see. Then that is that moment you have seen. Then the next moment you find out. You may hear, or you may sense, or you may think. Constantly, the sense organs are experiencing, but you are not yet sharp enough with your mind that you know what you are experiencing, you see?
But the sense organs are sensing all the time.
All the time. Only your mind isn't sharp enough. And it is so fast that it appears like a solid thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it is always just moments.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing, seeing, tasting, smelling, touching, thinking. But most of it, the sense organs are interfered and ruled over the minute they experience. By what? By thought. That is the one which makes us trouble. Because that is the one who can get into each one of your sense experiences and can interpret it and can make think about it, can make formations about it. You see something nice, wonderful, let's have it. What is it? Where is it? You see, you have immediately the mind. You cannot stay and let it be there. And that's what we're learning. In order to find out deeper about yourself, you must come to a quiet balance of all the experience. We must see how it is happening. And that quiets, and that puts everyone really in good order, and lets your senses experience it themselves in its more richness, you see? When you really taste your food consciously and are quiet there and don't have millions of thoughts and pressures over you, you really taste, you enjoy, you see? And the same way with seeing, when you are not overpowered by the thoughts and the anxieties and the doubts and your desires and planning and whatever you have, you don't even see it really. You see? you hardly notice it. You don't enjoy the beauty of the two flames, of the color of the flower, and you cannot find joy for long because you cannot rest with that. Why? Because the other, the mental formations push at us. The sense organ mind is overpowering every sense as a sense experience. You see? Now, through of experiencing the tactile sense base, sense organ, which is our entire body, which can sense and feel, through experiencing that now, we are getting the mind into order a little. You see, because it's a big field and it is very the easiest sense base to experience actually for this purpose. So I know then when I feel that the mind is also running here. But the more I put attention on it and concentration again and again and again and again, I am training the tactile sense base to experience just feeling, you see? And when you have trained one real good, all other sense organs are also getting trained at the same time. Are you really listening what
yeah.
I say? Yeah, because you're so busy asking the next question. Just listen carefully. And then you can ask the question, let me talk out, and then you raise your hand. So, but you see, that is the most. I'm delighted, Richard, that you are so active in asking, and you are thinking it out very much. But I just am concerned that you really hear what I say.
Mm.
Okay, now you can say what you wanted to say.
I think I forgot it.
You forgot it? Well, then it wasn't important, was it?
No, it was just not what you spoke just now.
Ah, then maybe you got the answer by that.
Almost.
Yeah, you see? You can't have the answers really right now all, because we try also to understand with the mind.
Now I remember.
Ah, good.
When we practice this vipassana, can you say that is a kind of... trying to stop the mental formations to come in all the time.
Right, that's what I'm talking. I was just talking about. Yes,
but
not trying to stop, but giving it. By that, we are putting it very naturally in order. It comes to its own order by letting it not in, by constantly attending. And I said, if you do allow one sense base to function beautifully in its own, then the others fall into order. Even the thinking a sense base. It's a very beautiful process, you know, Richard. Just stay with it. Just don't you go away. No one should ever go away. It's a process where you can become very sane and very content and very happy. Even if you think you're not happy, because you still have ideas what happiness is. Real, deep content is when you begin to understand the process, how it is here. Why you are unhappy? Why you are desiring? Why are you jealous? Why all this? You get all the answers then. It's just wonderful. I'm still miserable, I tell you. But a beautiful miserableness. Yes. It is very, you see, it's until enlightenment is steady and does is not just an entering the stream.
It is
not all perfect, but it is wonderful. Even then. So, dear friends, it's almost 10 past 9. I'm talking. I wanted to talk when I started, I looked, had my watch here, and I thought, tonight, not longer than 3/4 of an hour. Because it is very straining for me sometimes to give energies always, all the time. And these energies I give to you, they come really from my own energy, direct. And it is a constant kind of direct giving. And it strains me a little. I also am not that well yet from my physical ailment, the bone. I did go too far into the forest today. I noticed picking berries and slipping off some rocks I did, and it hurt me. Mm-hmm. So, and then I had an interview just before you came, before I came down, a full hour with somebody. So I am in constant, I think maybe we have some questions for this tomorrow. It's maybe enough. I just want to ask you, did you like that? Did it help us to understand a little bit our process? You think so? Yeah? Kerstin? Yeah, good. I talk about this, I think, since ever I come here. But you know, we need to hear it again and again, and somehow I myself do it each time differently. Also, so, well, I'm very happy that it communicated a little. Richard, I know you asked a question. No? Very good. But those who were raising, please, let's have it tomorrow, maybe. So, what would you like to do now? There are 15 minutes left. Would we just like to still stand up for a moment and sit down again and sit quietly? Okay? Okay, stand up. Very hard workers. God, from 7 on. I never asked you about the blueberries. Did we get a lot? Who saw the mass?
One third.
A third? Well, I beg your pardon. That was a lot. Everyone told me none. There are. It was wonderful. Did you eat them all or what happened with them? Did you? No?
No.
Are they still in the kitchen?
I put them under my pillow. No,
they are in the kitchen. Good. So, well, and let's just breathe in. Step a little forward again, that Kerstin has space in you. And bend and do what you feel you should do. Yeah. Good. Yes, that's a very good movement, Kerstin, what you do. That's very good. Mm-hmm. Good stretch. Mm-hmm. I am sad, Björn, that we don't get Axel anymore. So often he should be here, you know, his mind is just getting a little bit, don't forget, he came as a heart of the, that he came here to kind of heal a little, and I think he should be a little bit more, see to it that he comes a little, maybe we all talk together with him. You see, he was dancing yesterday till 2 o'clock. And got into, I don't know, he said somebody was about to kill him with a knife. I don't know how true that is.
No, it seemed like it, but they were
they were fighting about girls.
Uh-huh. See, that's not good for him to be there in such a company. He should not. Wise course goes, tell him not to go away out of this premise, of this property.